Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
Hey everyone, this is BTN. Welcome to Inside the Episode. Today, David and I are going inside episode 154, Create Your Own Economy. First off, welcome back from the Art of Success Summit, David.
It's glad to be back, man.
Yeah, it was excellent content, amazing energy, and such a great audience to take it all in. I'm still sort of basking in the glow of that and know that this podcast and had so many people come up to me, and you heard it as well at the event. Just so many people are listening to this show, yeah. And it's really making a difference. So I want to commend you for that, and we're just going to dive right into this, baby.
The other thing about it that was interesting was that how many people said that they were there because somebody recommended that they listen to this podcast, and they listened to it and it started to change their life, and they were like, I needed to know more. So then they started getting involved or coming to different things, yeah. And they ended up there. So that was really great to hear. I was really happy for that.
Yeah. And it's the first real event we've had where we've heard people. I mean, the podcast has been in production for, you know, a year and a half or so, but this is the first really real event where people were coming up and saying repeatedly, I'm here because of the podcast. Yeah. I heard the podcast, or someone told me about the podcast, and it's almost as if they knew you on a sort of like that intimate level. Cause you're in their cars on their commutes, you're in their ears on their exercise, like you're there all the time and you're giving them such impactful advice. I think it just made me fall in love with this process even more. Yeah. As if I wasn't already, it just increased that after coming back from
it's been an amazing thing. We're having so much fun with it.
Yes, totally. So let's talk a little bit about creating our own economy. So create your own economy, this particular episode. Let's talk first about the fragility of the economy and the role that the media has in that. In the episode, you talked about the psychological vulnerability on behalf of the individuals and how we spend money. And basically, it relates to what the media is saying. Oh, there's a recession coming. So people start to pull back. How does this affect the economy as a whole when we don't get out there and spend when people tell us not to?
Well, it does. I mean, that would throw us into a recession. And if you watch what's happening, and especially if you go through history. Now, it's interesting because prior to me studying or trying to change myself or learn, I really didn't pay much attention to the economy or anything like that. And then just through learning different things, I started to pay attention and started, you know, learning things as I went along. Well, I have been in business through probably three economic turndowns, one of them being, you know, 9/11. But what's fascinating about this is that you can watch it start to happen. Like currently, we're November, right?
Right.
We're November 2019. And there's a lot of talk about a recession coming. Now, maybe 6-8 months ago, you didn't hear any talk about a recession coming. The economy is actually in a really great place right now, to my understanding, for what they say. But there's one coming, okay? So we do know that our economy goes in cycles. It goes through ups and downs. It goes through strengths, and it goes through weaknesses. What's fascinating about it is that once they start talking about it and you start hearing people talk about it on the street, it's basically people that you run into, it's usually not too long after that before there is some kind of a downturn, because people start to get skittish about spending money. And then once they start pulling back and they start talking about it more, then you're in a full-blown recession. So when we come out of a recession, the exact same thing happens. They start talking about the Fed cut interest rates, or they did a bailout for something. There's always something where it gives them a reason to say that the economy is turning around. And what does that do? That says to people, oh, it's okay, we can start spending money again. So everybody goes back out and starts spending money. It's the people spending money or not spending money that is creating how healthy our economy is or it isn't. If people are spending money, then the businesses that are creating products and services, they're thriving. They're doing very well. They're taking money from banks to be able to expand. So everything just is very cyclical, and it keeps the healthy state of it up. It's like there really isn't this thing that happens that makes the economy not go upside down. Now, I know that there's like a ton of economists that will argue with that,
sure,
because between 07 and 09, what happened with the housing crisis was a little bit different. That was something that was going on with these banks and bad loans and all stuff. That was a completely different situation. But I'm talking the normal up and down of the economy and how that works and how industry works and how production works and businesses work and the mindset of people on how they receive money, you know, earn money, and how they spend it.
Sure. It's almost as if you didn't hear that coming from one of the 24-hour news cycles, you wouldn't even realize the state that the economy is in. If you drowned out all that noise, you would just go about your day-to-day business, spending as you would spending. When people hear it, they immediately, you know, tie up their wallet. They don't spend. They don't get the things that they want. And that, from a universal truth standpoint, restricts their growth, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's why, you know, you have been recession proof in your business, because in times of, we'll say, economic crisis that everybody else is feeling, you go against conventional wisdom and you continue to spend and buy and purchase, and you continue to grow your company. And you've done it, you said, two or three times through some difficult economic situations.
You know, I'll never forget during the big crash that we had here back in 08 and 09, listening to the news or listening to people, you would swear nobody was spending money. And yet, if I went to a restaurant, it was packed. If I went to a grocery store, it was packed. We were doing seminars in Vegas back then, and it was packed. Everywhere we went, there were people out spending money. So it's interesting, because you actually will go out and you'll witness this happening. You'll witness people spending money, and yet the media convinces you that nobody is spending any money. Now, if you're a business person, this is a big deal, because if you see people are spending money, then all you have to do is find the customer base that you have that is still spending money on what it is that you're doing, and you sell there. Like, it was a blip on the only challenge that we had in 09 was that credit card companies were cutting limits. And there was a little blip just because we had to figure out how do we do it so people can continue to do business with us, because, I mean, most people pay things with a credit card or a debit card or something. So when you've got, say, a family with, you know, 2.5 kids or whatever, and most of their purchases happening with credit. They've got, you know, they buy things on credit. And I'm not even saying in a bad way. I'm just saying in a relatively healthy way. And all of a sudden those credit limits get cut. They could end up with a very big problem, because they don't no longer have the financial resource that they would extend out forward to themselves, where that they would pay it later, right? So if they needed to buy a new washing machine, or they had something that was like an emergency, that creates a bit of a problem. So now, if they're looking at buying things that aren't a necessity, food, bread, milk, a car, transportation, clothes for the kids, doctors, whatever, they may pull back and say, well, I'm not going to do this because, you know, we don't have that much credit anymore. We could get in ourselves in big trouble. And of course, if they're trading time for money, if they have a job, that's absolutely true. There's no question about it. They also haven't developed the skill set to earn any other money yet. So we did. We ran into that problem, but we quickly figured out how to get around that problem. And we also helped, like a lot of other companies that operate the same way, get around the problem. But it was about being flexible. It was, okay, let's meet this challenge where the challenge is. And it was how do we make it easy again for people to spend money with us because they want to. They're just scared to death about what's going to happen with their credit. So we figured that out, and then we just kept moving forward. I mean, we never paid a bill late. I mean, it right. didn't affect us negatively in any way. But I watched friends go out of business because they panicked when that happened. They believed it. And once you start to believe it, you do create your own economy. You create the reality of it going right down the crapper because that's the mindset that you're in.
That's so true. Yeah, I love in this episode that you talked about the demonization of the rich and how people love to pile on when a person of wealth makes some sort of a mistake. You know, and I was talking to you before we went to tape about how I hear this often in other podcasts that I listen to, the fact that the wealthy are nothing but a bunch of divas, a bunch of eccentrics that do nothing to help others and are only interested in themselves. And we know that that's complete rubbish. This is another way that the media can use it to their advantage. You know, they want the people out there to embrace that Robin Hood mentality. Let's, you know, steal from the rich and give to the poor. Can you share more insight about how you feel about that demonization personally? Because I know for me, it drives me absolutely crazy.
Yeah, it's it is a fascinating thing to watch. And it's a fascinating thing to look back at through history also. And, you know, we have different stories in society that represent these types of things throughout history, right? For instance, during the Depression, when our country went into a depression, you know, in the 2030s, whatever it was, there were criminals that turned into celebrities, and one of the criminals that turned into a celebrity was Bonnie and Clyde. In today's time, they wouldn't even be a blip on the screen. Nobody would know who the hell they were. It wasn't like they actually pulled off like the biggest bank robbery in history, or you know. You also had at that time you had like Dillinger, Babyface Nelson, you know. All these different criminals, and they were like celebrities. And the reason, part of the reason for this, was that when we went into a depression, a lot of people were forced out of work. There were no jobs. No, we shouldn't say there were no jobs. There was a lack of jobs, and then you had people that were like in bread lines and soup lines, right? A lot of people, you know, living in street and in gypsy camps and stuff like that. Those people were of a mindset that did not know how to change their personal circumstance around. So not only were they disempowered, they were disenfranchised, and they were forced to live right on the edge of what survival was. But the way that they blamed, right, the demonization at that time was they blamed the banks. Because banks were closing, right? And banks held the money that they had. You know, I mean, like most people don't realize your money's only guaranteed by the Fed up to $100,000. But what happens if they don't have the money, right? It's worth nothing, right? That's why I say that there's no safety. There's no safe place to put your money anywhere, whether you keep it or you put it in any kind of an institution. There is no safe place. These criminals, these bank robbers, were going out and they were robbing banks. So the people kind of had this like, go get fucked. You know, like, great, they're taking from the banks. They're the mean ones. It wasn't like they were a Robin Hood either, because Bonnie and Clyde weren't giving people on the street money. They weren't robbing a bank and then throwing, you know, $20,000 out a window in a town so that people would actually have money. They were taking it for themselves. They were living off of that, and they killed a lot of people. But the whole idea that it was kind of like get your back on them, right? You know, it's really fascinating, because I think it's a very big misunderstanding of cause and effect.
Sure,
you look at people that have a lot of money, and you don't. And you feel stuck because you don't know how to get the money. You don't know how they got there. You're drawing conclusions based on stories that people told you of how they've got there. yes, there are people out there that inherited a lot of money and haven't really done anything and never do anything. I agree with that. But it's not the majority of the people that are wealthy. The majority of the people that are wealthy are contributing to society in a really great way, because the way that they're getting that wealth is by creating some product or service that is that society wants. They're buying, they're paying for, they're creating jobs that go along with those things. But all the people that are angry look at is what those people have that they don't.
Sure.
And then you know, there's an envy, there's a vindictiveness, and like you said, the demonization of these individuals, that the second something goes wrong, they can't wait to rip them apart and associate whatever it is that went wrong with the fact that they were rich. Now, sometimes those two go hand in hand,
sure.
Right? Like a Bernie Madoff, right? That
yes.
Those two things go totally hand in hand, right? Total scumbag, you know, bilked all those people out of the money. So to say that about him, that would be completely accurate. But you take somebody who, like Tiger Woods, like you and I have had many conversations about him. He was demonized because he stepped out on his wife right. and his family. But there were a lot of people that also threw the fact that he was rich in there, you know,
totally.
Like, look what money will do to you. Right.
Yes.
And like, money had nothing to do with him stepping out on his wife.
Yeah,
that's, you know,
it's just fascinating. And the piece to me that really, you know, gets me the most is that the argument is, well, the rich have all this money. If we just had the rich give their money to other people, maybe the lower or the lower middle class,
yeah.
then everybody would be on the same playing field and everyone would have the same amount and all this other bullshit nonsense that goes out there. If you asked a person, let's say, who was in the middle to give away their money to someone else, hell no, they wouldn't do it. A lot of people look at the rich or the 1% and the wealthy and say, well, they've got more than they will ever need. What they fail to realize is the amount of people, the amount of people they employ, the amount of jobs they create, the amount of money that they're giving. You don't know how much, you know, the 1% is giving away. All they hear is, well, they don't pay their fair share of taxes or all these other sorts of things. These are the arguments that I hear in my, you know, other podcast listening or, you know, surfing on the internet about the wealthy and how they, the demonization continues from those people. But I believe in my heart of hearts that if those people who are complaining about those individuals of wealth, they would change places with them in a second, because like you said, they're comparing themselves and seeing something that they don't have, and the jealousy and the envy rage on inside of them.
Yeah,
100%.
Well, I can tell you this, my taxes every year are more than most people's income.
100%.
You know, every month
right.
or every quarter.
Yeah, you're
whatever.
Paying your yeah. fair share as yeah. as everybody else is.
Yeah,
yeah, we're not that group of people who doesn't buy into that, you know, and we're not saying there's no victims here. You know, there are people who have been taken by other people, like you mentioned Madoff and all those other things. Those are tragedies from a financial standpoint. We're not saying that's necessarily a bad thing, but the demonization that's going on around the wealthy and people like that, and saying, well, let's just let everybody have it. If you gave just a bunch of money to, let's say, the poor on the street, they're not going to, they haven't grown in. We've talked about
no.
growing into your wealth, you know,
right.
the lottery effect. They haven't grown into
no.
that. They're going to spend it. They're going to do something most likely reckless, and they're going to be right back where they were.
Yeah. The people that are financially educated, they understand that if you took all their money and gave it to the poor, spread it out evenly, all the rich would have it back again in a very short period of time.
Right.
Because the problem with people that are poor is they don't understand money. They live from a lack mindset. So that when you live from a lack mindset, you're going to do things that cause that lack to be a reality in your life, even if you get the money. I mean, it's a well-known fact, 85% of lottery winners are broke within the first 5 years. Why is that? If money was the answer, 85% wouldn't be broke in 5 years. And not only that, many of them have their families, their lives are completely destroyed. And it isn't, even with them, it isn't because of the money. It's because of their mindset around the money. It's what they do with it. It's like giving a five-year-old the keys to a frickin' Ferrari, right? The kid's going to kill himself because he doesn't know how to take this beautiful car that's actually a piece of art and do something with it and be safe. It's the same thing with money. Money has an extreme amount of potential to it because you can do all different kinds of things with it. But if you put it in the hands of somebody who's reckless and doesn't understand it, who's not emotionally mature, chances are they're going to do a lot of damage to their own life with that. And it'll go, you know. When a person learns how to earn a lot of money, it's not just learning how to earn a lot of money. It's about how to negotiate. It's about how to get good deals and make good deals. It's about learning who to trust and who not to trust. Like, there's all different kinds of skill sets that come into play here, you know?
Sure.
You're right, Brandon. Yeah. There's like a tremendous amount to it.
And it's almost a hostility.
It's total hostility. You know,
it's like, let's all be in lack thinking and let's point fingers at those who are in their ivory towers, even though those people, like we said, are employing and doing their fair share.
Yeah.
It's really hostile. And it's almost like you don't want to talk about, you know, the privilege or entitlement, because that's what people look at you. They see, oh, you know, you guys are just privileged. You're entitled. You're self-made. I mean, you worked extremely hard to get to where you are. You put in the work, you've recognized opportunities when they've shown up, and you followed your desire to create this amazing company that's giving back and helping people and teaching people to go through the same things that you went through. You know, some see that as, some out there may see you as just, you know, another one of those entitled white males who's in the 1%. How would you respond to something like that, to somebody who would say, well, you're just one of those entitled people?
Well, first of all, I think that we have to be careful with the idea of self-made. I made a decision to change myself. That is very true. But there's no way I could have accomplished what I did without the tremendous help of a lot of other people. Now, as far as the white entitlement thing, I don't know what breaks I have gotten in life that other people would have not gotten. But this is what I can tell you. I can tell you that I've worked for everything that I do have. I have been told no about a lot of things when it comes to money. Over the years, I've tried to get loans. Let me think about this for a second here. Well, let's just talk about the loans for a second. We could also talk about employment, right? So before I actually started the company, and in the days when I couldn't get employed, nobody gave me a job because I was white. I'm also not saying that doesn't happen. I'm just saying that it hasn't been my experience. Sure. I have not had that issue. I was turned down from a lot of things, and I was told no, where I didn't get a break. I had to basically beg and convince several employers to hire me when they probably should not have hired me. So I don't know, Brandon. It's a touchy subject.
I'm like straddling the line here so bad because it's one of the. But here's the thing that I like about all this conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, you had mentioned, you know, many times that everyone on the planet has exactly the same amount of money, which triggers the shit out of people. We get that. But not everyone is aware that we all have resources available to us. Even whether it's lower class, middle class, upper class, we all have resources that we can pull from. And if we decide we want to change our own economy, because you're responsible for your own economy, whether whatever class you are in, you're responsible for that. You can make choices and you can change and get yourself out of that. I think that's what I love so much about this conversation, even though it's delicate and I'm kind of navigating it. Here I am sitting here thinking, oh my God, people are going to think I'm horrible. They're going to think that I'm one of the, you know, I even just about said it right there. One of those. I want to get that out of my language. I want to get that out of my, you know, vocabulary, because here's the thing I know. I grew up with not much, and I grew up, you know, my mom and dad worked from check to check. And not only that, but we, you know, we ate the government cheese. We did all those other sorts of things that, you know, we needed some financial assistance. But as we grew older and as Steph and I began to, you know, when we left teaching and met you, that's when everything changed. But I believed it was all about the money. I used to say, as long as I used to have the lottery conversation with my cousin all the time. If we won the lottery, what would we do? You could kill an hour and a half drive just having that conversation. And it was dreaming. The reality was I thought it was money. And then when you start to get into a little bit of money and you start to see your yearly income now become your monthly income, you would have thought it changed my life completely. And it did from a financial level, but the mindset wasn't there. My mindset was still a wreck. It was in a hard place. So I love this conversation because it gets to the root of what this whole create your own economy episode was about, in my opinion, is that it's about the mindset of people. It's changing the mindset.
It absolutely is. And look, here's the thing. It's no secret that there are people that are discriminated against and there's people that have advantages that other people don't. However, if there's anybody who is of a certain race or a certain gender or a certain background, sexual affiliation, whatever it is that it might be, and somebody has become successful, then anybody with that can become successful. I think that we all have obstacles in our life. Some have harder ones than others. But the human will to move past those things is absolutely astounding.
It can be the great equalizer.
It can be. And the idea is that one of the reasons I do what I do, one of the reasons why we have this podcast, is to teach people how to think in a way that allows them to overcome those problems. I don't care what color you are. I don't care what your gender is. I don't care what your sexual affiliation is. None of that matters to me because the idea is that you can be any of those things and you could still have an absolutely amazing life if you're willing to teach yourself how to think to be able to do it, period. That's the truth. That's it. So it, like you said, it's a great equalizer. It's the thing that levels the playing field for everyone. You can learn how to think successfully and you can change your life and make it the most amazing life that you could have ever, way past anything that you could imagine about winning a lottery.
I love that. I love that. Okay, let's wrap this up with this. So there's people out there right now who are listening, a lot of people who are stuck, a lot of people who may say, I've got nothing, or they think they have nothing when actually maybe they do have something. What can those people do today to start to get out of that way of thinking from a lack perspective and make that pivot towards abundance and getting out of maybe the problems they're in?
The first thing is to really sit down and think about what you want. And because I think that this is, you know, another thing when I was doing the Art of Success seminar, ran into a lot of people that really don't know what they want. And the reason that they don't know is because they stopped dreaming at some point. They stopped fantasizing about how they would like their life to be. The other thing is that they're afraid to want that. And I've seen this for years, this underlying fear that a lot of people have where they're afraid to want something or desire something. I'm not sure. I've never been 100% sure about what this is, but here's my best guess. The things that we really, really want are so close to our reason for living to begin with. To have them snatched away from us or have somebody like make us wrong for wanting those or kick us when we're down, they're kind of life-destroying, they're soul-destroying.
Painful.
Yeah, very painful. It causes people to lose hope. So I understand why they're a little resonant about maybe not going fully into that. But it's where I would start. Like, it's where I started. You've got to start to use your imagination, think about what it is that you really want in life. And then the moment that you can even pick one thing, like maybe you need a new car, maybe you want to get a better job, maybe you want to start a business, maybe you want to move to a different neighborhood. Whatever it is that you want, make a decision, pick that thing and make a decision that you're going to do it no matter what. The growth that happens in that transition from where you are to getting that first thing is enormous. And then it builds this internal strength to be able to not only go to the next level, but to be able to see the next level. So it's like we grow into seeing the next level of our own journey. And then we go further, we go further, we go further, we go further. And the more you do it, the easier it is to do it. And yes, it can be a bit of a struggle in the beginning because you're overcoming a lot of mindset crap to be able to do it.
Sure.
But everybody listening to this can do it. Every single person can do it. And then you build an internal strength that nobody can take away from you ever, right? So it's like dig down deep. Pick something that you really want, even if it's for your family, right? Pick something that you really want and go after it with everything that you have until you get it.
And see it through to its completion.
See it through to its completion. Absolutely.
Absolutely. 100%.
And create your own economy.
Yeah, absolutely. This has been fantastic, David. Thanks for coming inside.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.